Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Thing Socolo Village Studios. Bill is on vacation this week. This is Ben Bueller Garcia, usually the host of American Warrior Radio, heard Saturdays at noon here on KVOI, but very pleased to be sitting in for Bill today. If you'd like to interact with our guest today, give us a call on the Buckmaster Live Line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. That number is 790-2040, 790-2040. First, it was bottled water, then toilet paper. We thought the vaccines would help return life to normal, but if you've been shopping in the last couple weeks, you've probably noticed some bare shelves, and not just in the bleach and the toilet paper aisle. In the words of our first guest today, Americans are experiencing something we are not supposed to feel: scarcity. David Dayan is the executive director of the American Prospect. He was the winner of the 2021 Hillman Prize for Excellence in Magazine Journalism. His latest book, Monopolized: Life in the Age of Corporate Power, came out in 2020, just as the pandemic was taking hold. We'll ask David whether that was a good thing or a bad thing. David, welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
It wasn't a good thing for my sales, I know that.
But your timing couldn't have been better.
Timing could have been a lot better. Thanks for having me. This is obviously a huge and rare problem in America. We're taught to be that we're a place of abundance, that everything's at our fingertips, and because of the nature of global shipping, logistics, and globalization, we aren't in that position right now.
Well, David, it really is, and I told you we spoke a little bit in the pre-interview about how this just scares the heck out of me for a number of reasons. We'll get into that, but really not that this has been in the news lately, David, but by last count, I think there's something like 60 cargo ships sitting at anchor or just cruising around off the coast of California waiting to unload.
That's right. And, I'm here in Los Angeles looking at that right now. Obviously, President Biden announced that the ports would go to a 24/7 schedule in an attempt to cut through that backlog. But, we have been seeing these supply disruptions since the pandemic began, and it seems like they are only getting worse. It's almost like there's been so much new demand put in the system, whereas people were going out to dinner and people were doing activities outside the home. They are now continuing to, particularly after the Delta variant, doing things inside the home. And that has increased demand for sort of various sets of goods that have never seen this kind of increase in the past. And that has played havoc with a logistics system that is based on only getting as much inventory as is needed at that particular time. It's called just-in-time logistics. And the pandemic has really made this just into a tremendous problem. The fact that we don't have redundancy in our manufacturing output, the fact that so much is coming from one geographical location, mm-hmm. and the fact that so much relies on getting things just in time to various retailers right when they need it. The circumstances of the pandemic mean that any little shock, whether it's a port or a portion of a port going down because of COVID concerns, whether it's bad weather, whatever it is, it can magnify to an enormous effect.
Well, and David, they call it a supply chain for a reason. It's a series of links, and it's only as strong as the weakest link. I'm sure everybody's heard that expression before. So obviously the pandemic was a once in a lifetime, but a huge global event that's going to cause ripple effects. But just so people, and again, I was raised overseas, David, and I think that gives us a little different perspective than most Americans. But to put it in a way that people can understand, supply chains are not like a light switch. You can't just turn off the economy or that supply or that sourced product and then just flip the switch and bang, it's right back to where it was. It's almost more, I would compare it to siphoning gas. If you lose the suction, you gotta start over again and gotta get it up through that tube back into your tank. Is it your impression, David, or your opinion that even if there wasn't this increased demand, there would still be hiccups somewhere on the long line, wouldn't there?
There, it's likely to be. It's because of that stop and start quality to the last couple of years. The current global shipping and logistics system is just not prepared for that. There are sort of indicators that are put out years earlier of how much are we going to need in this place at this time. And if that gets disrupted in some way, it's very hard to spin that back and make changes. Part of this was just sort of a mismatch between shipping containers that are supposed to be in one place but are actually in another, and the business of getting those containers to where they need to be actually takes quite a long time, it turns out. So it's just little things that have caused this. And of course, when you're talking about the moving, it's not just finished goods, right? But it could be parts for machines or raw materials that need to go into production. And so when you have problems on the shipping of those kinds of things, then you have less machines available for output, or you don't have the materials to continue to make machines. One of the big supply issues right now is semiconductors, many of which are made from one company, Taiwan Semiconductor. And this is causing, because chips like this are in pretty much every, not only electronic device, but in most cars, it's causing a slowdown in production of those vehicles, of electronics, and then that gets into the shipping issues of those goods once they're finished, and you just have lower output all across the chain. And so this is not just a problem of a toy was made for me in China and I can't get it to my local store. It's the raw materials as well that are flowing along those same lines, and that causes slowdowns at every point in the chain.
And I tell you, that's what scares me. I don't mind Christmas gifts getting here a little bit late, or frankly, I don't mind them not at all, if that's what it takes, as long as I can still get food. And as long as I can still put gas in the tank. And those ripple effects you talk about, people, this may or may not be a good example, David, but my brother and his wife were caught up in the great Southwest Airlines, whatever it was, kerfuffle this past month. And they just needed to go from Phoenix to L.A. So I said, well, we'll just rent a car and drive it. Well, guess what? There's no rental cars. And what I understand is to survive during the pandemic, a lot of the rental car agencies sold off their fleets. But then because of the chip shortage and folks aren't making more cars, they can't replace that inventory, at least not soon. So those ripple effects that many of us don't think about on a day-to-day basis, I mean, this could get really serious. And I tell you, in your book that I mentioned before, Monopolized Life in the Age of Corporate Power, tell us a little bit, because there's a story you told in that book about a fellow and his wife at a cancer clinic. And something as silly sounding as salt and water.
That's right. Let me just say that's a perfect example of what I'm talking about, the rental car crisis. I mean, the fact that because people can't get new cars, they aren't turning in their old cars and making them used and moving that inventory downstream into rental cars. That's exactly what we're talking about here. So with respect, I mean, the story I told in Monopolized, which happened before the pandemic, mind you, is a perfect example of how small disruptions can be magnified because we have such concentrated manufacturing and concentrated shipping. So IV bags, which, as you said, is salt and water in a bag, are largely made in one location in the world, at least for United States consumption, and that's in Puerto Rico, by a company called Baxter. And after Hurricane Maria in 2017 knocked out a bunch of facilities in Puerto Rico, all of a sudden we had problems getting salt and water in a bag. And I told this story of this guy in San Diego at this cancer center with his wife, where he was getting, she was having to receive her medication through a manual push, which is someone using a needle and doing it in a manual fashion rather than through an IV drip. And he asked why this was, and they said, oh, well, we have a shortage of IV bags. We don't have these IV bags. And this place is right on the edge of the water in La Jolla, where overlooking the banks of these windows overlooked the Pacific Ocean, where there's nothing but salt and water as far as the eye can see. And yet he's being told that salt and water in a bag is in shortage. And there are more complicated reasons why the IVAC shortage happened. It wasn't just the disruption and dislocation in Puerto Rico. It has to do with the ways that hospitals purchase supplies. And that's a fairly complicated story. But the point is that small disruptions can magnify. And that's not only true of the IVAC situation. It's true of what we're now learning, virtually everything within our economy. And the solution here is for more redundancy, more onshoring, more production picked up in a way so that if you have this disruption, we have an alternative.
Dave, I want to talk more about that because your article really touches on, again, something that a lot of us common folk out there don't think about, and maybe how many of these pains we're experiencing are self-inflicted. I want to chat about that when we come back. Ladies and gentlemen, this portion of the Buckmaster Show has been presented by Mona's Danish Bakery, located on the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, home of their famous Danish Kringle. Mona is open for breakfast. They have patio dining. They do takeout and delivery and also catering. Listen, if you're planning ahead, we're talking logistics shortages. You might want to plan ahead now for those delicious baked goods you want for Thanksgiving. Place your order online at monasdanishbakery.com, or you can always visit buckmastershow.com for a link to Mona's. We'll be right back.
Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
Arizona runs on affordable energy produced right here at home. But as prices on everything rise, politicians in D.C. want to increase the cost of American-made energy. That means we may have to rely on energy from foreign producers instead of here in America, potentially making it more expensive to live here in Arizona. Tell Congressman O'Halloran, don't tax American energy producers, because affordable, reliable solutions are made in America. Paid for by Energy Citizens.
This is Bill Buckmaster. You've heard me talk about choosing Tucson International Airport. While fewer people are traveling lately, our airport is doing even more these days to help ensure traveler health safety, including counter safety shields, physical distancing markers, enhanced cleaning, and more. It's called TUS Cares, and you can learn more at flytucson.com. These may be different times, but my priority remains to fly Tucson. Tucson International Airport.
The Regional Transportation Authority celebrates 15 years of project delivery to the Greater Tucson region. As promised, the RTA has delivered nearly 900 projects from its 20-year 2006 voter-approved regional transportation plan, which is funded by a half-cent RTA tax. The RTA is committed to deliver the remaining plan projects. Learn more about the RTA's economic benefits at rtamobility.com.
Why is mining so important? It's the foundation of everything that defines a society. Everything you see is a product of mining. No matter when, no matter how, no matter why, every society on this planet has developed, grown, and modernized based solely on the minerals it could process. That, my friend, is why mining is so important.
Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Vets working hard to save wildlife covered in cactus spines. A skunk left for dead, miraculously saved by a caring citizen. Those are just a couple of the headlines from the nonprofit Tucson Animal Rescue Center, where thousands of animals are cared for each year at its state-of-the-art Far East Side Tucson facility. Rescue, rehab, and release. The Tucson Wildlife Center, saving wildlife for more than two decades. Donate online at TucsonWildlife.com or call 290-WILD.
Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is once again welcoming guests to the gallery. Stop by or call ahead for a one-on-one appointment or even a virtual design session.
Come by Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, located at the southwest corner of Fort Lowell and Dodge. The number is 795-8226 and on the web at moesgallery.com.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, folks. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill here on 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk source here in Tucson. We're talking with David Dan. He's the executive editor of the American Prospect. David, I tell you, I stumbled across your piece about supply chains, but I'm a fan now. There's just so much great stuff. Give our listeners your website, if you wouldn't mind.
Sure. We're at prospect.org. It's the American Prospect, been around for 30 years, and we write about politics and power in this economy and in our political system.
Well, and there's just lots of great stuff there, frankly. I find myself getting edumacated every, last few days I've visited. So coming back to your supply chain article, mm-hmm. most recent article, I tell you, one of my other favorite editors or writers or smart guys is Joel Kotkin. And mm-hmm. he just published a piece called Confronting the Supply Chain. And he talks about, you know, I see a lot of finger pointing going on right now at a national level. The ships can't get in. The unions say we're working 24/7. There's not enough trucks. The truckers are saying we're parked here waiting for a load. Well, we can't get the. It's just so getting back to the answers, and both your and Joel's article, I think, got to is something that folks don't think about. And you talk about the just-in-time inventory, the way we've gotten used to doing business, and how this pandemic and the resulting ripple effects have really tested those theories. And do you see us going back to something a little more old school where people actually have warehouses somewhere along the line?
I mean, we should. I know that the administration has talked a lot about reshoring. They've talked a lot about supply chains in sort of national security related goods, whether it's pharmaceuticals, most of which come, the active ingredients come from India or China, or defense parts or semiconductors, things like that, advanced manufacturing. That certainly should be part of the mix. I mean, the whole idea that has been built up for the last several decades based on advice from management consultants and Wall Street is that you have to be efficient. You have to be lean and mean. You cannot have any kind of extra excess goods sitting in a warehouse somewhere because that's a cost and that's money that's not working for you. And what that has done is made our economy just not resilient at all mm-hmm. to any kind of disruption. And that's exactly what we've seen in this crisis. And the fact that it's been so elongated puts the lie to the whole efficiency argument. I mean, if it was more efficient to have this lean, just-in-time logistics system, then it wouldn't take 2 years to untangle and counting if a problem arises. So it would arguably be far more efficient to have some redundancy within the system so that it is more resilient.
David, that was my thought too. I don't know how clearly you and Joel are smarter than me, but I don't know how not having product on the shelf is good for the bottom line.
I mean, yeah, exactly. The belief is that we have mastered the system of logistics so much that we can put something on the shelf right before the person comes in and wants to buy it every time. And that just hasn't worked out. It just that just has not been the case over the last couple years. And this also coincides with a real rethinking in terms of labor and people saying that, you know, as a trucker, as an independent who controls my own costs in terms of my truck and my gas and everything like that, I'm not going to sit here at the port for 24 hours. This is a bad job for me. I only get paid by the load. And so I'm going to move on. And so you have this shortage of truckers. And that moves on down the line into customer facing services like retail and restaurants and things like that, where you've seen an increase in quitting and what is so called a labor shortage, but it's really more Sometimes it's called the Great Resignation, people just rethinking work. But I think that's all, I think this is all connected. You know, it's all kind of part and parcel. The system that was set up in a way so that companies who were moving goods around the world could profit off cheap labor at every step and not worry about getting caught short at all, they're now seeing a reckoning with that at a global level and at every link in the chain.
You know, I another perfect example, David, I was out to dinner with my family just this week, and there's a 30-minute wait. And I'm looking and I'm peeking in the restaurant. There's plenty of tables available. So I asked the host, I said, why is a 30-minute wait? You have all these tables. She says, we don't have the staff. We don't
That's
have
right.
servers. To So you know, you're just going to have to
in
wait.
In the month of August, according to statistics put out this week by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, 7% of all food accommodation and hospitality workers quit their job in the month of August.
Wow.
That's one in every 15 workers in that industry quit. And whether that's because they don't feel like the conditions are safe enough, or whether the pay is too low, or whether they've just rethought after a collective trauma of the pandemic that they don't want to spend their time doing this, whatever it is, there is a serious problem with workers who have decided that this is not for them, and employers have not met their expectations to bring them back into the fold. So this is something that is going to play out over a long period of time as that balance comes back, and employers realize that they might have to offer more, or they might have to change the terms of employment in order to get the what they need, and not leave people like you hanging for 30 minutes waiting for a table.
Well, even more serious, and I tell you honestly, David, this scares me quite a bit. I mean, normally I do a show about, you know, we talk about the military, and just the idea that we're manufacturing parts that go in our military systems in China, it just makes me, baffles me. That should be
it should be scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it is a consequence of a sort of Wall Street-led financialization of everything within our economy that says what you have to chase is the cheap labor that is overseas. We have to give up domestic industry in order to maximize returns. And once you go down that rabbit hole and you keep going, you end up with a situation like that. And you know, not just weapon systems and things like that, some of which is still made in the United States, but you know, look at something like pharmaceuticals.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, where the active ingredients are largely in China and India. What if we have some other kind of crisis we've already experienced this, where we had the pandemic and most protective equipment was made overseas.
Well, or even
we had huge shortages bringing that in. We had nurses in trash bags.
Yeah, or even scarier, they choose to do so. I mean, this could also
right.
be a political decision. David, this is a great chat. We're running out of time. I got about a minute and a half left, though. Let me make you master and commander of the world. How do we solve this? Is it trying to break up some of the monopolies? Is it reshoring critical industries, or heck, any industries that brings jobs at all, or all of the above?
I absolutely think that concentration in almost every step of these, the producing businesses, the shipping companies, the trucking companies, and everything down the line is triggering a lot of this. So, yes, we're going to have to do a better job on antitrust policy. The current crisis is going to take a long time to untangle because we're just in that system right now. What we do from here will determine whether we have future crises like this. And we can do things in terms of reshoring, in terms of antitrust enforcement, in terms of just more geographical and production diversity, in terms of location, that can make us a much more resilient economy.
Anything I should really be scared about? Now, I was a Boy Scout, so I feel pretty confident if there's more toilet paper shortages, I can run up on the mountain and get that fixed. But what do you see as potentially the most ludicrous shortage we may have?
Well,
toys.
I mean, It's kind of everything. I mean, you mentioned in the pre-interview about home heating oil being on the rise. You know, having this energy crunch typically is something that you see in advance of economic downturns. And now that's not what's happening right now. We have soaring demand in many areas, but you know, energy is so important for every other part of this, right? If you have higher energy prices, it costs more to ship your goods. It costs more to get things into retail stores. And usually that has meant depressing economic conditions. We'll see what happens.
David, give us the website again.
Yeah, it's at prospect.org. So that's prospect.org.
Both fascinating and frightening. Thanks, David Dan. Thanks for spending some time with our listeners here today on the Buckmaster Show.
All right. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. When we come back, we're going to be talking about National Police Week. Stick around.
CBS News Special Report. An FDA advisory panel has just endorsed Moderna's COVID-19 vaccine booster shots for seniors and those who are high risk.
So we do have a unanimous 19 out of 19 yes votes, and that concludes the voting portion. So we can close this out, and I will hand it back to Dr. Monto.
It will come as welcome news for those who have been trying to get a booster who got Moderna as their first two doses. It comes weeks after both the FDA and CDC already authorized Pfizer's third shot. President Biden today said the number of new COVID cases and hospitalizations is dropping, which he says is because of an increase in vaccinations.
I'm asking everyone who hasn't gotten vaccinated, please get vaccinated. That's how we put this pandemic behind us and accelerate our economic recovery.
This third Moderna dose still needs full FDA approval, and then the CDC must also allow their use. CBS News Special Report, I'm Matt Piper.
Vero Amore Restaurant in Plaza Palomino at Fort Lowlands 1 and Dove Mountain in Marana are now open for limited in-restaurant and patio dining, along with takeout and home delivery. All of your favorite Vero Amore menu items, including Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza, are ready for you and your friends and family. More at veroamorepizza.com.
Have you ever imagined how your life would be without the modern conveniences you rely on every day? Everything you need depends entirely on products produced from mining. Without mining, think Stone Age. Your work commute might be a bit slower, but you could still have social media. Bathing shouldn't be a problem, but it won't be in a tub. So unless you're a caveman, you can see everything that enriches your life depends on the many miracles from mining. Brought to you by the Southern Arizona Business Coalition.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100.
As a small business owner, I appreciate the services of a top-notch certified public accountant. That's why Michael C. Flowers of Flowers, Rieger & Associates is the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Michael's a former Small Business Leader of the Year in Tucson. He'll professionally handle all of your accounting needs and tax preparation services. Flowers, Rieger & Associates, 6125 East Grant Road, and on the web, flowersrieger.com.
The average person in the USA today takes over 12 prescription medicines each year. And if you are over age 65, it is more than 17 medicines. CredibleMeds.org is a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping inform you and your healthcare providers. Over 30,000 people die each year from reactions to their medicines. Don't be one of those numbers. Be informed and stay safe. Visit CredibleMeds.org today and take control of your healthcare by taking your medicines safely.
Ray, this is the best bumper music ever. You make me feel good, particularly after that last guest that scared me. Welcome back to the Buckmaster Show, broadcasting from the Green Things Socolo Village Studios. This is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill. You know, now that fall has clearly arrived, you might be looking at your garden or replacing some of those potted plants that didn't quite survive the summer. You definitely should visit the experts at Green Things. Since 1970, Green Things has been Tucson's go-to place for gardening needs. While you're there, check out the fine imported furniture and art at Socolo Village Studios. Green Things and Socolo Village are on River Road just west of the Brandy Fenton Park and on the web at greenthingsaz.com and socolovillage.com. That's ZOCALOvillage.com. If you'd like to ask a question, call us on the Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management line, 790-2040. National Police Week was first proclaimed by President Kennedy in 1962 to memorialize law enforcement officers fallen in the line of duty. Normally, it's held in May, but this year, because of the pandemic, is taking place this week in October. And joining me to talk about that and those important issues is someone I'd like to consider a good friend. Certainly, I'm a fan of you, Sherry Graham Potter. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show.
Thanks, Ben. I'm always super excited when I get a call from you to come in and join you. It's great to see you.
I have always been a supporter of law enforcement.
Yes, you have.
But I never wore, because I never wore the badge. I support the military because I never wore the uniform. I never had to. And obviously, these are very intriguing times for families in the law enforcement community. But your connection is obviously a lot more tragic and personal. For our listeners who don't know your story, if you don't mind sharing it, would you just let them know?
Absolutely. My husband, Tim Graham, was a deputy with Pima County Sheriff's Department. In 2005, he was in a foot pursuit with a suspect. They ran into Ajo Road at Kinney in the intersection. In the struggle, a taxicab driver pulled over in an attempt to help my husband subdue the suspect. It rolled from the median into the roadway, and unfortunately, all three were hit and killed by an oncoming truck. This was August 10th, 2005.
And yeah, well, I don't know if there's, I thank you for your courage in sharing that. I don't know if there's anything to add to that, but clearly you firsthand know the importance. And that's something, Sherry, that the, part of the reason I wanted to have this on, because folks, even if they know that it's National Police Week, they may not know the reason behind it or why we do it or what takes place. And that's something that I always try and encourage as I'm out there talking to people. You know, in my day job, you know, lobbying, you know, a rezoning hearing might get a little sporty. You know, people will pound the podium and yell at each other. But my wife doesn't have to worry about me coming home after one of those things. And I mean, literally, these men and women who wear the badge, that unfortunately is a very real issue. And they're doing it for us, for the rest of us.
Absolutely. You know, every family that I know that has a law enforcement officer, it's a concern. It's something you worry about every day when they walk out the door. I'm remarried to an officer now. I still have the same fear every time he leaves. It's something that you learn to deal with. When Tim was killed, we'd only been married for 1 month.
Oh, my.
And so the last thing I was expecting 4 weeks into after my wedding was a knock on my door telling me that my husband was never coming home again. It truly is the biggest fear that family members have. And National Police Week, the way I look at it, is sort of the jumping off point for people to come together, family, surviving family members, as well as coworkers. And that's sort of an overlooked aspect as well. The coworkers are incredibly affected by the death of another officer. And so National Police Week is not just about the memorial. It's not just about the candlelight vigil, but it's about the national conference, which brings survivors together. And it gives them an opportunity to be around other people who understand and have been through what these families are experiencing.
And this is a huge event. It attracts I mean, tens of thousands of people. And it's normally held in Washington, correct?
It is. Washington, D.C. It starts May 12th and it runs through the 15th. And it gives these families an opportunity to heal. The national conference in itself is people coming together and they're getting counseling. Their children are getting counseling. And like I said, it's sort of a jumping off point in recovery for the first year families. But on top of that, there are families that are coming back for sometimes the 25th time in their lifetime. They lost their spouse or they lost their family member years and years ago, but they continue to come back. And so it just continually builds this network of support for newer families as they come in, and friendships and everything just grow from that. And it's incredibly, incredibly important for that recovery process to begin.
One thing, you've attended, I assume.
I have many, many times, okay. Probably over a dozen times.
I guess as an outsider looking in, Sherry, the one thing that I see missing from that whole equation is communicating this out to the civilian population. And as I mentioned, these have been some pretty intriguing times for law enforcement and communities as a whole, for all of us. And I can't think of a more important time for the average person out there who doesn't think about it, unless we see the flashing lights, you know, behind us, or unless there's some kind of crime or something that impacts us. We don't think about it on a daily basis, and that's the way it should be. But we need to think about it more often to understand what these families go through and the sacrifices they're making on a daily basis for all of us.
I completely I agree with you on that, Ben. One of the things that I think it's hard for the general public to understand is sort of the dynamic of police work and everything. It's not just those experiences, the deaths, mm-hmm. but it's also what they go through on a daily basis. And I think the more community involvement, the more supported these officers and their families feel. We lost three in the last 10 days in Arizona alone. And we're up 30% in gunfire deaths in police just this year. And it's violent. It is scary out there. And the climate that we're seeing in the negativity towards police officers is not helping. It's driving a lot of false narratives. And so these guys, these men and women are feeling just less and less support. And we're seeing heightened suicide as well in that community.
You know, our previous guests were talking about supply chains, and let me apply that theory to what's going on now. I mean, we're losing officers to early retirements. They're frustrated, they're angry, they're leaving. I think the highest number of deaths this year nationwide of law enforcement officers has been due to COVID.
Yes.
I think we lost 200 and some officers to COVID, so numbers are down. But then, like you're talking about, in the context and what they're seeing out there, it's got to be awfully hard to recruit. So how are we replacing that back end, and what happens to our communities if we can't?
Well, we're not at this moment. I mean, we were seeing departments across the country are struggling to fill positions. When you think about it and when you look at the backlash that these police officers have been getting the last few years, who would want to go into it? It's getting more and more dangerous. They're getting less and less support. And so the communities, if I could tell people what to do, support these officers. It's so incredibly important, because what we're seeing now in the rising crime has mm-hmm. so much to do with the fact that we have significantly fewer officers on the streets. And not just that, but a lot of them are afraid to do anything because of what may happen to them and their families down the road.
Which is and that's a line of work where hesitation can literally be deadly.
No question.
For, not just for the officer, but for some of the other folks out there. Ladies and gentlemen, this is Ben Bueller Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. I'm with Sherry Graham Potter. We're talking National Police Week. You need to hear these messages. Please share them. If you'd like to give us a call, 520-790-2040. We'll be right back.
Tucson's original gastropub, Noble Hops in Oro Valley, proudly announces a second Tucson area location where you'll enjoy locally brewed craft beer and gastropub fine fare. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies, on West Lambert Lane at North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley, and now at the Doubletree Hotel on Alvernon across from Tucson's Reed Park. More on the web at noblehops.com. When the public weighed in on the first draft of the Regional Transportation Authority Plan, the RTA responded by revising the final plan before voter approval in 2006. The RTA is preparing for a new plan for voter consideration by June 2026 and invites your input on regional transportation priorities. A draft plan will be presented for further public review. Submit your input or learn more at rtanext.com.
Hello, I'm Danette Bewley, CEO of the Tucson Airport Authority. At Tucson International Airport, we're nonstop supporting jobs and prosperity as an economic engine for our entire region. From an innovative and touchless passenger experience to earning the GBAC Star Accreditation, the golden standard for cleanliness, our team is ready to welcome you back to Tucson International Airport. Begin your journey with us. We're nonstop for you, Southern Arizona.
Are you searching for a sumptuous suite on the Italian Riviera, an exploration of the mighty Mississippi, or an indulgent spa in Cancun? Bon Voyage Travel will help you find exactly the vacation you're looking for anywhere in the world. With many cruises setting sail in over 1,100 hotels and resorts to choose from with our exclusive benefits, Bon Voyage Travel's experienced advisors are here to guide you every step of the way. Visit bvtravel.com or call 797-1110.
Hi, this is Pam Krim, CEO of the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona, where we set the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the place to turn for objective and unbiased information on businesses. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau of Southern Arizona at bbb.org/Tucson.
Green Things is a family-owned and operated plant nursery serving Tucson since 1970. Open daily at 3384 East River Road, Green Things is chock full of plants and pottery from around the world. Green Things is also now home to Zocalo, featuring fine Mexican and South American imports spread over five buildings on the 13-acre Green Things property. For more, visit greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Welcome back to the Bill Buckmaster Show, folks. This is Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. You notice that there's a little bit of bite in the air. Fall is a great time to visit our friends just across the border at Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Just 3 hours away from Tucson, there's lots to see and do, from Silver City's historic downtown to the beauty of the Gila National Wilderness. I personally recommend a visit to the world-famous Cliff Dwellings National Monument and the Catwalk Recreation Area. For a complete listing of things to see and do and all the great places to stay, visit southwestnewmexico.org. We're back with Sherry Graham Potter. We're talking about National Police Week. And Sherry, I love having you as a guest, but it's always hard because, I mean, I can see it in your eyes. Just this is still a very painful discussion for you. And I'm grateful that you continue to do this to help spread the messages. Tell us about cops.
Oh, cops.
Not the cops we're talking about. But the organization.
Concerns of Police Survivors. Actually, they're the one that put on the National Survivors Conference that's going on right now in Washington, D.C. They have chapters all over the country. And when I was first introduced to cops, it was shortly after my husband was killed. And I actually just randomly ran into and met another surviving spouse who happened to be the president of the Arizona chapter of Concerns of Police Survivors. And she's the one that brought me into the organization to begin with. And one of the things that that organization is so amazing at, it is using survivors to support other survivors. And one of the things that struck me the most when I did meet Jan Upchurch, who lost her husband in 1990, 15 years before Tim was killed, was how she had moved forward with her life and how strong she had become and how she navigated that loss. And so much of that was through the support of Concerns of Police Survivors. And so I cannot say enough good things about this organization. It's been absolutely incredible. They take care of the children, the spouses, all the family members of a fallen officer, as well as co-workers.
You know, you touched on how, and I see this too, and I don't quote me on this because I'm not that bright, but there's been an increase in murders in particular all across the country. But the numbers here in Tucson are, I want to say, we're talking like a 3-digit increase, and I'm hoping that's a black swan event. But just the violence, coming back to this situation just recently down at the Amtrak station, again, I'm not a police officer, I'm not a prosecutor, but when I read the details that I could see about the amount of drugs that these guys were carrying, it was not worth taking a life or losing your life over. It was just, I mean, they might have maybe just sighted the guy, but he chose gunplay instead. Now, it turns out I think he had a warrant for murder on his head as well, so that might explain it. But, I mean, those officers, both the DEA agents and the Tucson police officer that ran toward danger, if you've seen the video, I mean, you can hear the gunshots going off, and these guys are running toward the train to try and help people. And I know the Tucson police officer, I think, was wounded twice. But so we've got a call, Paul. And Paul, I'm going to warn you, Sherry is not, she'll tell you exactly what you think. Paul, you called the Buckmaster Show with a question for Sherry.
My question is this. I'm 100% behind the police. But what bothers me is that the policemen that I've known talk so much about the police union that they're backing, that they have, that backs them. But I don't see, now I'm a businessman and have several ventures, and I have unions. But our police unions should be standing up for more protection and more rules against people harming our policemen. Now nobody ever mentions that our unions don't stand up for them, and nobody ever mentions the fact that these policemen are working in a world with two totally different cultures. I mean, do you think people in downtown Chicago, the policemen are dealing with, they don't even understand the people that they're dealing with? They come from different worlds in the country that have no respect for the police, and our union should be pointing this out and protecting our men in blue.
Paul, thanks for your call to the Buckmaster Show. I'll let Sherry address that. There's a lot of opinion in here, Sherry. What do you have some thoughts on that?
Well, it's a little bit different. All police unions are a little bit different. Some of them are significantly more powerful. In right-to-work states, like here in Arizona, unfortunately, they just don't have the power that a lot of unions do, especially on the East Coast. I'm not particularly familiar with this. My husband could answer this a lot better than I am, but I do agree with you. Not just unions, but anybody needs to get behind police officers in this. It's become so split, Paul, and I totally agree with you on that, and I would like to see that happen as well. I know that they try, but it's difficult a lot of times working with governments that are working against them.
Sherry, when I was first lobbying, I learned a trick, not a trick, but a strategery that, you know, sometimes for people, because this is a complex situation, like a lot of things are. Sometimes using the most extreme and ludicrous example is a good way to get people's attention and sort of communicate the importance of the point at hand. And so when I hear the defund, you know, so I guess the question is, what would a community with zero police look like? I can't imagine. I mean, it would be, even the Wild West had law enforcement officers. I mean.
Right. I don't think we want to ever find out what that looks like, because it would not take very long to be completely overrun. And that's a terrifying thing. And I think the defund the police people should probably think about that a little bit more, because there are a lot of ways we can make changes that we need to see. Nobody has ever said that the police are perfect or that they do everything correctly. But to take it so far as to just get police officers off the streets and send social workers in to do their jobs is ludicrous. And if you think it's violent now,
Right.
Wait until something like that happens. I mean, we're seeing it in some of these cities that have done that and have pushed the envelope with that. And it has never been successful yet, as far as I'm aware.
Well, and you're seeing in many of those cities now, they're returning the budgets to the police department. Maybe lesson learned. You know, I'll give folks credit. I think most people out there are well-intentioned. But maybe they just don't, you know, that we become the poster child for, you know, unintended consequences. What if Sherry, you know, I gave the last guest the same opportunity to be master and commander for a day. What if you were in charge of the world with an unlimited checkbook, what would you like to see? And I want to emphasize also, too, nobody hates a bad cop more than a good cop.
Oh, my goodness. I cannot stress that enough. I deal with police officers all over the country in my work with Concerns of Police Survivors. We do a national bicycle ride across the country. I ride with cops from all over this country. They are all good people. I have yet to run across a bad police officer, and I'm not saying they're not out there. But the thing is, there are bad people in every walk of life and in every career choice anybody makes, but for some reason we have pigeonholed this, and it's having huge repercussions all across the country. And I think people need to step back, look at the real data on bad police, on police shootings, on people who are unarmed, really look at the data and then compare that to the amount of contacts that police officers across this country have on a day-to-day basis, and understand that these are the good guys almost 100% of the time. And so we need to let them do their jobs.
And yeah, I agree with you. I think folks, everybody, I'm all for people getting more educated, no matter what the subject matter is. It can't hurt. I mean, we should all be lifelong learners. And one of the best examples I've found, Sherry, in this context is there's actually, I don't know if it's a training video or an actual situation out there that talks about the 21-foot rule. And so many people say, he only had a knife or a baseball bat. Why did they have to shoot him? And this video actually shows the bad guy covering that 21-foot distance before the police officer can actually draw their weapon and employ it. And so there's a lot of stuff out there that we in civilians just don't get. So sometimes, as my sainted mother says, sometimes best to just keep your mouth shut. What can we do to support? What are some of the basic things that folks can do on a daily basis out there to let these officers and their families know that we love them, we support them?
If you run into a police officer, tell them thank you. It's actually very simple. I think we're all, to some degree, possibly a little intimidated by police officers in uniform. You don't want to bother them. You don't want to, you know, I'm not saying disrupt them in the middle of an arrest, but if you're in a coffee shop, buy them a coffee. Sit down. They love to talk about their job. They love to take people on ride-alongs. Sit down. Engage them in conversation. Ask them the hard questions if that's what you need to do. But I think that's the best way. We need to come together as communities, and we need to re-embrace the law enforcement community into our whole community again. And I think that's going to weed out a lot of the bad ones to begin with.
And just to be fair, they're very busy out there right now, folks. They're short staffed. So if they don't have a lot of time for you, just understand it's nothing personal, but they've got to get on to the next call. Sherry, thank you so much for what you've done over the years and what your family continues to do to support all the rest of us.
It is my pleasure. Thanks so much, Ben.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Ben Buehler-Garcia sitting in for Bill Buckmaster. You can hear this podcast and others, Bill Buckmaster Show podcast, at buckmastershow.com. Stay safe out there, folks. Have a good day.